No, I love it. It's a hard thing working to a degree for this company because everyone comes or judges us without really having understanding and knowledge. But if you take the time to listen, you're not necessarily going to sit and say, oh my God, everyone should go have an affair. But you might come away with a better understanding of what's happening and maybe make changes within your own relationship to avoid that very scenario.
People are so intrigued on like the why are people doing this? What are these relationships actually like? The difference between a long-term affair and a serial cheater. And then obviously like with a website that is dedicated to helping people facilitate finding somebody to have this discreet relationship with is, you know, just wildly intriguing. So I know that my audience is going to be very interested in this conversation. Wow, are you guys going to love this one? Welcome back to The Scarlet Edit. I am your host, Nikki Corbett. My guest this week is the Chief Strategy Officer of the website made famous for facilitating affairs, Ashley Madison. I'm not going to keep this from you guys any longer, so let's get into it. Paul Keeble, welcome to The Scarlet Edit. Thank you so much for being here. Everybody listening, Paul is the Chief Strategy Officer of the website ashleymadison.com. If you do not recall what that website is, it is a website where their tagline is life is short, have an affair. So Paul, thank you so much for agreeing to be here.
Thank you so much, Nikki. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
So I did spend some time over the weekend watching the documentary that Netflix put out because I was just curious about what they shared. And one thing that stuck out to me was that when Ashley Madison was started was because you guys had found out that 30% of people on dating apps intended for single people were actually married.
Yeah, our founder in the early aughts was seeing the rise of online dating taking off and becoming the new norm. And obviously there was a business case for that to happen. But he did see reports suggesting that a lot of married people were pretending to be single on these sites, which to him suggested, well, why don't I create a place where these people, ironically, can be more honest about their intentions, about what they're looking for with others who are looking for the same thing? Because his belief was, if you are a married person going on a single site, pretending to be single, but in fact you're married, you're complicating what you're trying to get. You're putting an increased risk on your affair because you're more likely to get caught that way because the other person you're having this affair with isn't even aware they're having an affair. And so when they do discover that, they're more than likely going to try to out it. Whereas if two people are both married seeking an affair, neither one is likely to act in a fashion to cause the affair to be discovered. And so you have a greater likelihood of that affair being what we think is successful, undiscovered.
Are there any single people who join the website?
Well, it's interesting because we've seen a really significant shift in our membership over the past, I'd say, 5 or 6 years, where maybe 20% would identify as what we term disclosed non-monogamists, meaning their partner or partners are aware, if not participating, in their actions on Ashley Madison. And increasingly, we're finding even other types of people, singles, divorcees, joining our site because the discretion we offer is very enticing. We've spent the past 20 years living life online in a very public, if not overly transparent fashion between our social media lives, our dating lives, and particularly for women, there's a fatigue there. You know, Nikki doesn't want to go in the office and have Bob in accounting seeing her dating profile. She, you know, she wants to do what she wants to do without others looking at it, except for those she chooses to invite into that world. And so we're getting a broader scope of people. So yes, we have singles, we have married, we have polyamorous, we have open, we have swingers. We have just about everybody you could possibly imagine simply because of the fact of the discretion that we offer. And I think that is really the future for our business.
So is there a way for a person to share what relationship status they have when they create their profile?
Absolutely. Everybody. So the interesting thing is when you typically go to a traditional singles dating website, we're an aesthetic-based society. And so you first look at their profile photo. That's sort of the guiding light. And unfortunately, and again, from the female perspective, too often men don't bother them to scroll down and read the actual bio to see what is it that she's into, likes, is interested in, what she's looking for. And it's just aesthetically based. Whereas you've got Ashley Madison, the majority of their profiles do not have a profile photo. At least they don't have a profile photo of their face for obvious reasons. They're there for discretion. Many of them obviously are there for an affair. They're not going to put their face up there. So you have to read the profile. And in that profile, people more often than not disclose the very specific nature of what they're looking for. And again, it's a very interesting twist in a site designed intentionally and originally for people looking to have an affair. Our daters, we feel, are probably more honest about who they are and their intentions than people on traditional dating sites. And not to suggest those are liars, it's just that if you're on a traditional dating site looking for a potential life partner, you're presenting your best self. Absolute best pictures, your absolute best version of you. It's not a lie, but the reality is you're never your best self 24/7. But the majority of people who come to Ashley Madison are looking for something very specific, something that is uniquely missing from their life. And so they're not trying to pretend they're the be-all and end-all or present necessarily their best self. They're presented their real self because they already are living, for many of them, their quote-unquote best life. They're just missing something. So they want to be direct. They want to be honest about what that is. And doesn't matter how good looking you are, if you don't fulfill that specific space niche, you're not going to be a good match. And so people, you know, are very deliberate in their profiles. And I think it forces better conversations.
No, it's kind of like a running joke between some friends and I who go on and off dating apps is that everybody on Bumble is a CEO.
Yeah. And apparently all the men are 6 foot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing, too, like you said about like putting your best self forward. I mean, everybody's going to put pictures where they think they look the best. And then maybe that picture is a few years old and maybe your body has changed or maybe your hair color is different or anything, right? That could be a surprise when you meet somebody in person versus putting actually what you truly look like today, what you're doing today, how pictures that were taken within the last month and not the last 10 years.
Correct. And I think, you know, again, that's what we discover in our site is that people are sharing more of their authentic self. So it's a combination of, you know, what it is the best of me looks like, but also what's the realistic of me that looks like and acts like and what does the realistic Paul desire? Because I'm not looking, if I'm on Ashley Madison, likely for 2.5 kids, a dog and a white picket fence. Mm-hmm. I probably already have that. I'm looking for something else.
I'm looking for something else. So when people go to sign up, what kind of data do you collect from them? Obviously, they're coming there because of the discretion. They probably already have that American dream life, but they want something more. Is there like a survey or a question where people are giving you, hey, this is what's going on in my life and this is why I'm here?
No, in fact, we try to collect as little amount of data as possible because of the nature of our business with discretion at its core. If we don't need that information, we don't want to collect it. And so we leave it to you to disclose what you want. In essence, you need an email. We're going to verify so that, you know, we obviously want to cut down on fraudulent actors as every dating site is challenged with that front. And so we get that. And then obviously, if you're purchasing credits, then to communicate with people, you're going to be using your credit card or some form of payment. And after that, really, it's up to you to disclose what you see fit. You don't even have to upload a photo if you don't want to. We don't force that. Okay. You can choose to share that if you wish. And what's really interesting on our site is that we have what is called, you know, like your public profile photos. If you want to upload it, you can. But you also have a private locker that if after a conversation has been initiated and you feel that this is somebody you're interested in and feel trusted towards them, you can then share your key with them. They can access those photos. But when you're done that conversation, whether it progresses or not, you can take back the key and the individual no longer has access to your photos. They can't screen capture them. And so those small discretionary, you know, product features are all designed with the intent to give our users more control over their experience so that the amount of information they're sharing is as little as they need to and only when they want to.
Okay. So how do you deal with people that maybe want to come on for nefarious reasons and upload fake profiles and put, you know, these AI generated images of beautiful women and then they're in fact not?
Well, we have really robust tools and systems in place to sort of measure that. Obviously, if you're posting a photo of a celebrity, we're not likely going to take that photo, right? So I understand Charlize Theron is a beautiful woman, but I highly doubt she's on her site. And if she is, she's probably not putting her face photo on. So that's a starting point. We have self-reporting tools. So if you look at a picture or you look at a profile, interact with somebody who you don't feel is quite on the up and up, you report them, we will investigate every single report. And if we look at it and something doesn't seem right, we're going to take it down as well. So if it's overly AI generated, or, you know, if you list yourself as a 5'10", 140-pound person, but the picture is a 5'2" blonde person who weighs 90 pounds, we're going to be like, well, something's off here. So we're probably going to suspend you and then, you know, ask you to either upload photos that match or change your profile. And if you get enough reports that clearly indicate you're acting poorly, we're going to suspend your account.
Okay. On some of the dating sites, you know, you can verify yourself. So it'll scan
and
your
face,
and then you get that.
Okay. Yeah, we give the option. You can selfie verify, and you could also do a government ID verification, which is the highest form of verification. And we all work.
Okay.
All of those verifications run through a third-party system. So no one at Ashley Madison will see your documentation if you're doing government ID. And what's great about it, it gives our members a higher level of trust. So when they see someone's gone through the effort of verifying themselves, they're highly more likely to be there for the right reasons. I'm going to engage with more. And the data shows that the people who are verified get more engagement, both in the male and female side.
Okay. I haven't been on dating apps in a while, but I did like that feature because
Absolutely.
Then at least I feel like, okay, this person, you know, went through the trouble of having their face scanned. So like they can be like sure that like I am me, I can be sure that they are, you know, he is him.
Yeah, there's never like 100% guarantee in these things, but the more efforts that members take to authenticate themselves, the more, you know, trust signals they're sending out. And in the dating world, in a digital world that is continuously rife with, you know, fraudulent actors, we're creating a space where people can be more authentic, be themselves, and feel secure in what they're posting, but also feel secure with who they're communicating with. So we don't force it. It's up to you. But we do offer two forms of verification. And we're finding a lot of success for the members who have chosen that path.
Okay, let's pivot a little bit and start talking about like more of the inner workings of affairs and just things that you have learned over the course of your time there. Because I think that is certainly a piece that many people are interested in. A lot of times people, they find out about an affair as it's happening, and then it's like they're more focused on the scandal of the affair, but less about like what actually happened in this relationship, what went on, why were people there, how long did it last, like was it only about sex, was it about, you know, friendship and companionship and all of these different things. So what has been the biggest, you know, surprise piece of affair knowledge that you've learned over your tenure here?
Yeah. So I've been with the company since 2013. So it's been quite a ride. One of the favorite parts of my job and working with this organization is that we get to work with a lot of academics around the world who are really interested in studying the natures of infidelity and monogamy. And particularly on the front of infidelity, it's very difficult to study it from a traditional survey methodology because people lie. People lie to themselves, never mind to you. So if you're doing a Gen Pop survey, you're not going to get good data necessarily.
Yeah.
But if you're asking Ashley Madison members about their thoughts, opinions, and feelings towards infidelity, well, they're probably going to be a little bit more truth because you signed up for the site. So you've already indicated you're in that space. And we actually had a researcher come to us a couple of years back by the name of Dr. Alicia Walker. And she was really interested in understanding the gender differences as to what precipitates someone having an affair. And her studies, which are now both written up in two separate books, were not paid by us. So this was for her own work. But the findings, I think, were really revelatory and flipped the script in terms of what society thinks is happening. 80% of the women in her studies were in sexless or orgasmless marriages.
They 80%.
Were 80%. And what they were saying basically was that we love our partners, our spouse, our family, our life, except for this one thing is missing. And traditional counsel would be compromise, either sacrifice your love life. And 20, 30, 40 years of a bad sex life does not sound very appealing or appetizing to me, at least.
Same.
Or divorce. And that's, okay, so I'm going to blow up the 90% of the good just to get the 10%, and no guarantee that I find that other 90%. So we're offering a third path where these women choose to come to Ashley Madison. And it's worth knowing and saying that for the majority of them, or a significant portion of them at least, they do talk to their partners long in advance before joining Ashley Madison to, you know, ask for what's missing, talk about what's missing. And for a lot of them, the men are either unwilling or unable to accommodate what their partner's asking for. Or sometimes they're just not listening properly, at
Fair.
Least. And so these women are choosing to outsource their intimate needs to Ashley Madison. And what's interesting, I've spoken to so many members over the years, and I've heard this refrain in one form or another that I'm a better mother, lover, and wife because of my affair.
That's
and that
so
comes out in a variety of ways. And they go back home and they're a better wife to their partner because the stress of what's missing isn't eating at them day in and day out. And when you have a bad sex life, as you lead into the weekend, as you lead into date night, and you know, even if you're going to have sex, it's not going to be satisfying for you, that's debilitating. So that's happening. But what was really fascinating for me on the male side is that the majority of the men in the study were seeking emotional validation. They were in relationships where they no longer felt desired or wanted or appreciated. And I tell women this all the time. You know, we live in an aesthetic compliment-based society, meaning, you know, someone in your life would say, oh, Nikki, you got a great haircut. I love those glasses, the way they frame your face. They'll say something to you about the way you look, and you'll say, oh, thanks, gee, that makes me feel good. But in majority of, you know, relationships in Western culture, that doesn't exist on the flip side. We don't tell men, hey, I really think that shirt looks nice on you, the way that those pants look on you are really nice. That's not the way we communicate because men are supposed to be stoic, man in the house, alpha males. You know, we don't need these things. Well, it turns out we do. It's a human nature part. Women are getting that in good relationships, but men, even in a good relationship, are not getting it because we're not trained that way and they don't recognize it. And so they seek that out and it will manifest quite frequently, obviously, in a physical affair. But what they're really wanting is that aspect of feeling desire that I'm still the guy, I still got it. And when they no longer feel that in the relationship, they're going to turn outwards for it.
Yeah. So many things that you're saying remind me of the relationship that I was in. You know, I was single, he was married, but I mean, I do remember him telling me one day, like, I feel like being with you has made me a better dad. And yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. If you feel like spending time with me is making you a better dad, that's awesome. But it is interesting.
Who live outside this world, who have never had these experiences, they're going to, you know, shame and point fingers and deride statements of that nature. And I'm like, before you do that, listen to what's actually happening. If your partner's telling you this and you're just like, well, he just shouldn't be that way. Well, that's just not reality. We desire certain things. And this is one of the things that I always kind of like sit back and I wonder, why do people like chastise us so much without digging in, without trying to understand why does this continuously happen? Why has Ashley Madison been in business for 20 plus years if what we do is so horrifically bad? Maybe it's because people are seeking it out. People desire it more than you want to acknowledge. And we got to have better conversations in our relationships, not just around sex in and of itself, but absolutely about sex, but all the functions of intimacy that surround sex.
Mm-hmm. What percentage of your site is male and what percentage is female?
So it's interesting. That's a question a lot of people criticize us on because there's this misogynistic belief that there's no women to possibly sign up to Ashley Madison because that's based on the thought that women don't cheat.
Couldn't
women
possibly.
Don't want to have sex. I'm like, well, we've been in business for 20 years. So if there's only one woman per city, she's a very, very busy woman. Or maybe there's maybe a bit more. So interestingly enough, we actually hired Ernst & Young, the big global auditing firm, a few years back to audit our membership to verify these numbers because, well, I can come out here and tell people just don't trust us and believe us because they don't want to believe it. It's nothing to do with me. I think I'm pretty good at what I do. And so in that report, which is publicly available, anyone can go to our site and download it. They looked at a full year's worth of signups. And in that particular year, there was 1.13 active females for every one paid active male. So there was, in fact, more women than men who were actively using the site in that capacity. And it was amazing. And in some of our Latin American countries, it was 2-1.
Wow. That's fascinating. But I mean, I also feel like it isn't that surprising given, I guess I would say, like, given my age, you know, I'm in my mid 40s. And thank you. Love a compliment. No, but I mean, it's so interesting too, because, you know, as you move through your 30s into your 40s, and then as you start to approach your 50s, a lot of people have been married for some time. They have kids. And, you know, we talk to one another. And there are people who, exactly like you said, like the sex isn't that great, or I rarely have an orgasm, or we don't have sex that hardly at all, or, you know, people are unhappy. But then it's like everything you're saying, at least anecdotally, I can say is true. You know, people say like, oh, it's everything but this, but I don't want to blow up my whole life by getting a divorce in the hopes that I can go and find somebody that can give me the entire package. I do think a lot of people, though, end up resigning to just dealing with it.
Absolutely. And I think that's incredibly sad. And we're animals at a base level, and the desire for connection and touch is so important to us. And we see this throughout the animal kingdom. So I don't know why we think, just because we have a higher intelligence, supposedly, that at a certain point in time, that our partner, that we don't desire that touch for them, that feeling. It's going to change over time. And it's interesting. We work with a marriage and sex therapist by the name of Dr. Tammy Nelson. And she has this really great concept that she advocates to her clientele called the 5-year monogamy contract. Mm. And the point of it is that every 5 years you renew your contract. You just sit down and discuss, where is our relationship? What's the nature of our relationship? What is important to us? What's changed? Because who we are 25, 30, 40, 50, and so on changes dramatically. And it's not just an excuse to say, okay, now I get to sleep with other people. That might be what happens, but not necessarily. Mm-hmm. There's a whole gambit of activities within a monogamous relationship that will change. And as you were talking about, like when you're younger in your 30s, you know, you're having kids. And life is really tough then, particularly if you got multiple kids and your career's taken off. And so all those things are going to interfere with your personal relationship. And if you just accept that, it will go downwards. But if you talk about it in a purposeful way, ideally you would do it all the time. But what Dr. Tammy Nelson is saying is, if you're not, at least have this vehicle so that at minimum every 5 years, you're recognizing that things have changed. How do we want to address that on a personal relationship basis? What do we want to continue doing, stop doing it, or do more of, kind of a attitude? And I think that is a really fresh perspective on how to maintain your relationship. So it doesn't just simply boil down to, let's rent a hotel for the weekend and get freaky. Because if you've not been doing anything for years ad nauseum, and then suddenly you're going to fix it all in 1 week, and well, that's just unrealistic thinking. You got to sit down, you've got to talk, you've got a negotiation. And it's hard because we're not trained to have these very intimate discussions, and people can be very embarrassed. And particularly you grew up in a very conservative culture or family, in a place where these types of things were never discussed, as you know, as you grew up. So you don't know how to broach it.
You said something like what's working, what's not. And it kind of reminded me of like quarterly business reviews type discussions where it's like stop, start, continue, you know?
Yeah, what do we, that's exactly what it is.
What's going on here? But it's like applying those principles and things that oftentimes a lot of people do every day in their work life, but then taking those things and coming home and applying them to your relationship, it seems like it'd be very valuable.
Absolutely. Having intention in your conversations. And sometimes, you know, if you're having an issue, some people struggle to bring it up because they don't have the right time or place. But if you've created a vehicle that is agnostic, meaning you don't have it just because there's a problem. Sometimes these things are great. And you say, you know what, this past 5 years is amazing. I don't want to change anything. And your partner say, you know what, I agree. We don't have to change anything. But you're having that conversation in a place where it's expected. So you're not, you know, afraid to bring something up because you don't know what's the right time or place. You have a time or place set aside. Like I said, ideally it happens more often than 5 years, but a bare minimum, that seems pretty reasonable to me.
I think it seems incredibly reasonable, especially in this day and age where we have so much information out there. And I mean, I would venture to say so much more temptation is available, and it's easier to have, you know, any type of affair, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, whether it's both, because of all of the technology and all the different ways that we can connect with different people on a daily basis.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, I've had members who have joined, who were married, and then they decided to divorce their respective spouses and then marry each other. And I even have one couple who did that, but also discovered that monogamy was their actual issue. And then they opened up their relationship, and both of them came back to Ashley Madison individually, but with each other's knowledge and awareness.
This week's episode is brought to you by my Patreon community, Rewritten. Inside this space, you will find resources, live Q&As, opportunities to connect with others in the privacy of a judgment-free zone, and so much more. I want to build this community together, a society of women who are choosing the best for ourselves, who are shaking off the stigma or shame of past decisions and using our history to shape our futures. I believe the love I desire is out in the world for me, and while there are decisions in my past I would not make again, each of them shaped the woman that is here today, and I love her something fierce. Come check out the Patreon. Anyone who signs up between now and October 31st, the first month, is free. I look forward to seeing you inside. Now back to our episode. So do you guys have kind of like an open line of communication with members where they can like write in or chat in to share their experiences?
Absolutely. So we regularly talk to our members on a variety of subject matters to get their thoughts and opinions, not just on their experience on the site from a pure business perspective. Absolutely. That's part of it. But also from a psychological perspective, you know, what were you thinking? Like, what were the outcomes? And then we've had, like, mm-hmm. I said, lots of academic studies, but also internally, my team particularly talks to our members on a very, very regular basis because the data tells you one story, but hearing the emotional aspect, the anecdotal mm-hmm. from the individual tells you a very different perspective. And when you match the two, you know, you get better understanding of what people are looking for, what their desires are. And so I don't think a week goes by where we're not regularly connecting with our members to get feedback, input, and stories. And some of the stories are just amazing. Like, you know, I've been, like I said, 12 years with this company. And every, you know, month I'll say, oh, I've heard it all. There's nothing new that can possibly mm-hmm. be come out of this. And then my team will come up and say, well, I got a story for you. And I was like, holy moly, that's a new one. I've never seen that. Like, one of my favorite is we have this one member, and I could talk about it publicly because she's out there herself. Her name was Bobby Goldman, and she was married for a very long time to a very successful Hollywood producer. She had a number of her own businesses, so she was independently financial and successful. And unfortunately, her husband passed away. And then I think at this point, she's either late 50s, early 60s. And she's seeing her therapist, and the therapist says, listen, Bobby, you're depressed, but I think, you know, the issue is you just need to get laid. it's been a while. And Bobby's mm-hmm. like, shit, you're right. And so she signs up to all these traditional dating sites, and all the men in her age category are like, they're basically looking for somebody to fold their clothes and make them a sandwich. And that's not what Bobby wanted or Bobby needed. And so Bobby mm-hmm. signs up to Ashley Madison. She ends up at one point, she's dating 7 different married men.
Wow. And that'll keep you busy.
Absolutely. And she meets some of the spouses of these men, in fact. And these women are, you know what, thankful. Thank you for being there, for doing this. He's so much happier. That part of my life ended for me. Wow. I didn't really want to participate anymore, but I don't, you know, feel any shame about him doing this. It's a perfect pairing. And what's fascinating about all this is the reason we became aware of Bobby is that she ended up writing an off-Broadway play called The Curvy Widow.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And so her story is in song and dance out there. And I think it's beautiful because it tells a very different nuanced aspect of how infidelity is not one story, one way, and it mm-hmm. doesn't always show up in how we think about it. Another, you know, type of affair that I've heard through members, and this story is poignant, is the compassionate affair.
Okay.
And we had a member who she was a lawyer, successful, well-regarded in her industry, in her city. She was somewhat prominent to a degree. And unfortunately, her husband was a bit older than her. He fell into early onset Alzheimer's. And so she ultimately became a caregiver for him. But her desires, needs, and wants didn't dissipate. But because of the nature of her position and who she was as a public figure to a degree, she couldn't mm-hmm. go and date people. That wasn't an avenue viable to her. And so she mm-hmm. chose Ashley Madison, and she found a partner. And, you know, she met someone who was, you know, this long-term affair that fulfilled each other's needs and enabled her to go back and continue to be the wife her husband needed her to be, that she wanted to be, because the day-to-day frustrations of that part that she had lost was being fulfilled by somebody else. It's not necessarily ideal, I suppose, but in a world where, you know, we have such judgment, you know, it makes me feel joyful that we could provide that to somebody. It shouldn't necessarily have to be that way, but it is. And that's, you know, why our business exists, for people like that and across the board. They can choose a discrete path to fulfill those needs and be the good person they want to be.
So what would you say, given all of the feedback that you guys get from members and the different studies and, you know, data, you know, outside sources that you guys use to collect data, look at data, analyze data, what would you say in this last couple of years, what's the number one reason that you're hearing that people are joining your site and looking for other ways to fulfill their needs?
Discretion, particularly from the female side. They're tired of having their intimate needs, wants, and desires posted online, and they don't want, you know, it's shared with anybody and everybody. They want to curate, a connection of people who are what meets their needs, not every Tom, Dick, and Joe on the internet. And the swipe life is incredibly fatiguing, where men will swipe 100 women. And, you know, our site works very, very differently. You know, we're not a subscription-based site. And because of how that creates a dynamic where I can go on and swipe right on 100 women or more in a given night and just wait for that one to respond to me that's, you know, available for it or whatever. And that's just not a great experience. Whereas on our site, men will have to buy credits and use them to communicate with a woman. And that first message costs anywhere between, you know, $4 and $7. But once she responds to you, that conversation is now can be free for the rest of the time. And so it protects the men to a certain degree so that they're being more purposeful in who they're choosing to speak with. And if they end up meeting someone and go off, the rest of their credits stay on the site. They don't have to buy a new package. And whether it's, you know, a month or 6 months, they come back, they're all still there. So they're not paying for that ongoing subscription. They don't lose their account. And for women, they're not getting inundated in their message box for a bunch of, you know, unsuitable men. It's not that all men are bad. It's just if you didn't read my profile, you just looked at me and thought I was pretty, but you didn't see what I was specifically looking for. You were wasting my time and wasting your time.
Totally.
So men have learned on our site to be choosy. I read the profile because there isn't a picture. I see, like, is she geographically situated in a place that makes sense for him, not driving 3 hours for an affair? Is she, you know, the right age category? And does her description of what she's looking for match the description of what I'm looking for? Okay, let's see if we can make a connection. And we find it creates a much better experience, all under that cover of discretion. And people, I think, increasingly, and particularly in the younger ages, which I find surprising to a degree, they're turning away from dating apps because they don't want everything out there and they don't want to have to facilitate a romantic or even a casual connection in such a public fashion. They want to control their experiences with a little bit of discretion, not out of shame or guilt, just simply out of a modicum of, it's none of your fucking business what I do. It's my business. Who I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is the average age of a member these days?
So, you know, it changes depending on your countries, because like in India, where I think they're our number five country in terms of sign up, they're much, much, much younger. But that's a culture that gets married much, much, much younger. And so the issues that arise in marriages show up earlier than they were. But typically, from a North American perspective, you're looking at women who are like 38, 40, men 44, 46.
Okay. And what's the average duration that somebody is an active user on the site?
It's not something we track because it there's, you know, obviously you can get an average, but it doesn't tell a correct story because the unique nature of the type of, whether it's an affair or something else that you're looking for, changes. And so people come and go. I've had members who've been on for well over 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because again, you're not looking for a partner, full-time partner. You're looking for potentially a collection of experiences. And so if you're on for 10 years, that's what you're looking for.
Okay. Do you have any idea what percentage of members are doing this completely discreetly?
Well, like I said before, 20% of the people identify to us as disclosed non-monogamous, meaning their partner or partners are aware, if not participating.
Okay.
But the other 80%, it's a big range. But anecdotally speaking, when we talk to the members, a lot of them will actually offer up to podcasts and media if they can do it in a, you know, anonymous fashion. They're going to come with a face on.
Sure.
And a lot of people do want to do that because it's a bit of a catharsis, because for the most part, they're not telling people. They don't have anybody they can confess to what they're doing. And they want to get it out. They want to talk about what's happening so that people can not necessarily change their opinion about it, but understand it more from a reality perspective versus what we think is happening. And sometimes they're trying to speak to their younger self, quite frankly. They're trying to say, you know, young Paul, you know, what you thought you were going into wasn't quite what it was. And I wish you had known, because maybe not necessarily would have made different choices, but you would have had a better understanding.
I'm so fascinated by all of this, just given different things that I've learned about, you know, people practicing polyamory or people who have open relationships, or, you know, it seems like it still is one of these aspects of life where people are like, ooh, like what's going on there? But I feel like it's becoming more and more common where people are not wanting to necessarily leave the life that they have or leave the relationship that they have, but they're more comfortable going out and figuring out how they can have all of their needs met in ways that work.
Well, it's interesting.
For their
I don't
life.
Know if you've ever read the works of Dr. Wednesday Martin, but I would
if
recommend
not,
her.
Okay.
She wrote a book a couple of years back, and she talked about how the rise in non-monogamy is something that is being particularly driven by the females. It's women who tire of monogamy long before men do. And we have the reverse perception in culture because we think men are just a bunch of horny guys and they just want to sleep with everybody that moves. And that's just not true. It's not that women are thinking that. It's just that monogamy is a bigger burden for women than it is for men, and they tire of it earlier. And for a significant portion of them, I believe it's because, and I think America is a great, case in point here, women's sex education is abysmal.
Yeah.
And so, I'm Gen X, so I'm a little older. So I grew up in a world where sex education basically was don't get her pregnant, don't get an STD. So that was it.
Putting the condom on the banana.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And now, I have teenage boys and, obviously they're getting that same message, but they're also getting the consent message, which is really good. But particularly for women, what you never get is here's what good sex is for a woman. Here's how a woman's body works. And for a lot of women, they go along to get along in their teens, in their 20s, and they don't really start to have a sexual awakening, quite frankly, till their 30s or 40s for a lot of women, because it takes them that long to figure out what's working and not working. I mean, how many times have we heard a woman say, well, I think I had an orgasm? What do you mean you think? You know. When you've had one, you know. Any woman who's ever said, I think I had one, you did not. Because there's no question if you had one or not, if you've had one.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of women who've just never even accomplished that. And the data is, I think it's like 80% of women don't achieve orgasm from penis and vagina sex. And so if that's true, but we're not talking to women about that, and we're not telling them, okay, here's what you need to do, and every woman's going to be different. We're not giving them any representation of that. And then the default education mechanism tends to be pornography, which is the worst case scenario for women. It's not that pornography's bad. Pornography is great. Yeah. It's a great form of entertainment, but it's a horrible form of sexual education. And by the time, and this is the downside, is that when women start to figure it out, maybe they're 10 years into their relationship and they turn to their partner and say, okay, listen, we need to make some changes because I'm not getting what I need. And the men, unfortunately, take it as a criticism of them. It's not you're bad. It's weren't doing the right things. We collectively, and now I'm going to ask for it. So men, here's my advice to you if you're listening to this. If a woman says, things need to change in the bedroom, listen to her. It doesn't mean do everything she says, nor should she do everything you say, but listen to her and find a way to fulfill her needs. And this is a really important point. Toys are your friends. They're not your enemies.
Yeah. I am always surprised when I hear he got offended that I wanted to use a vibrator, or he got offended that I wanted to try a toy. Like, what? I'm not enough for you? And it's like, that's not what it's about.
Yeah. It's like, why wouldn't you? I mean, there's no guy out there who's, I'm a golfer. And I spend a lot of time golfing. Every guy who golfs will go buy every new widget toy and gadget.
Great analogy.
To make their golf game better. What, your skill level's not good? Your swing's not good enough? It's the same thing, guys. So go get the range finder that vibrates in the bedroom and you will find the clitoris, hopefully.
Oh my God. Hopefully. Right. Jeez. I know. They're like, sometimes you really feel like you do have to,
but to be fair to the men here, a lot of women don't even know themselves because they're not taught it. You know, there's this idea sometimes of, listen, just, tell him to pull your nightie down when he's done, like just put up with sex to get it over with. And there's a lot of people who convey that message to their daughters that's the sex talk, like whatever he needs, let him do it. As long as you're not getting hurt. But then when he's done, just, figure yourself out later. I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Why don't we talk about this? What works for you? What doesn't work for me? And be open to that conversation. But it takes so long to get there, and a lot of resentment gets built up and fear. And, that's part of what I go out here and do these conversations. I want men to understand there's so much more to sex than what you think there is. And it's, trust me, you're not going to get it off Pornhub. But talk to your partner, because if she doesn't know, then you guys can start exploring together and figure out what does and doesn't work. And just remind yourself that it's about mutual satisfaction, not your pleasure solely.
That's That's very well said. I appreciate that.
No, thank you.
So what's your total user base at this point?
So we're a little over, probably over 90 million members have signed up since we launched at this point.
90 million. 90 yeah, million. That is a ton.
I'm going to say we probably come close to 100,000 new members a week.
Wow.
I know,
and
it's crazy.
So it would be, I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the data breach simply because that was how how a lot of people even found out about the site, right? And then, you know, of course, like I mentioned earlier, the Netflix documentary. So and I'm sure every podcast you've ever been on has said this to you, like that should have ended you guys, yet it didn't.
Well, here's interesting point about that. During the worst moments of that time period, what wasn't really reported on was the fact that we went from about 30,000 people signing up a day to well over 100,000 people signing up a day. And our revenue was up 10% or more. Like, we had double digit percentage revenue growth. So it wasn't just people signing up to be trolls. They're paying us money. And what I said, I remember saying at the time to some people internally, because obviously it was a very stressful moment, I said, we can survive this. We're going to have to work really damn hard to rebuild the trust with our memberships. But what we're offering is desired and needed in society around the world. We've just got to, you know, change a lot of things internally, which we have. And now that it's 10 plus years later, clearly, I think we've done a really good job at working with our members, building that trust up and providing a space that they feel very comfortable in. So yeah, it was, it was a moment in time where we let our members down, but we've rebuilt from there, and it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, undoubtedly. So you mentioned India as being like your number five most members country. How many countries are you in?
I think it's around 45 now.
Wow. Okay. And where's your biggest user base? United States?
Yeah, United States. I mean, that's just a pure population, culture, all those things. And we've been there the longest. I mean, that's where is our original, even though we're a Canadian company. I think we launched in Canada, the U.S. at the same time. And Canada's a fraction of the population of America, obviously.
Yeah. So are there any surprising indicators of marriage success or failure that it's come out of any of the studies that you guys have had done?
Well, I don't like those terms, success or failures, because not having an affair, I don't necessarily consider success. I know lots of couples who have never had an affair and they're miserable. And I'm like, quite frankly, I would tell them, like, one of you needs to get laid. And because you're both miserable, you've just decided to be miserable together. And that just sounds like a horrible set of circumstances. So no, what we do know is when affairs are more likely to show up in a marriage.
Okay. Guarantee people would love to hear that. So do tell.
Yeah. So the first instance is what we call the first bump effect. Because when you get married, it's an extended honeymoon phase. There's two people and you kind of have the free will and time to do whatever you want, however you want within your financial means. And there's nothing else interfering within your relationship, technically speaking. And then along comes the pregnancy. And that's the first bump effect. And now that you have a third, a child involved, things change dramatically, both from a time perspective and a physical perspective and a psychological perspective. Sometimes a man will say, well, now you're a mother. I can't do these things to you any longer, do these things with you any longer, because good mothers don't do those things. A lot of women are going to be like, I'm the same person I was, you know, two days ago. So I don't know. I want my ankles behind my ears at some point, please and thank you. But sometimes women have that feeling. I'm a mother now. I can't do those things. And then there's just the component of bodies change, and not just the woman's. I'll guarantee you, I mean, I have two kids, trust me, the time commitment of going to the gym and working out and eating right goes out the window in those first few years when you're chasing toddlers and wiping butts all the damn time. And so your body changes. And, you know, but now your careers are taking off. So you're working long hours. You're staying up with the kid, getting up with the kid. You're exhausted. So the physiological impacts, all those things. And so that quite often is when the highest incidences of first affairs happen. The second most likely time is empty nest syndrome. So you've raised your kids.
Yeah.
And you put all your time and energy into them, and out the door they go, successfully launched. And then you look across the dining room table at dinner and you're like, who the hell are you? We haven't spoken really in 20 years or more. What are we going to do with each other? And suddenly people realize things have changed and we haven't really acknowledged or dealt with it. And now what are we going to do about that? And that's where, you know, another significant number of affairs will start showing up.
One of the things that jumped into my head as you were saying that about how when a woman has a baby and how so many different things change. I remember one of my guy friends saying years ago, and after him and his wife had had their first kid, he was like, it's so weird. I've never looked at boobs as anything other than for my own enjoyment. And now they're like giving life to this baby.
Right. And seeing your partner, you know, acting as a mother and doing these things in a motherly way. And never mind if you were in the birthing room, because some guys flip out over that. You know, there's so many things that change. And this goes back to my earlier point about if you're not talking about what this means for your life, what how these changes are impacting every aspect of your life, you're going down a bad road. You've got to know that, yes, everybody's gone through it, but the ones who ride it out and get the most out of it are the ones who talk about it. And, you know, it's not so much a negotiation as it is an acknowledgement that, you know, what we had before is going to change. What are we going to prioritize? And it will change from time to time. And so we just, you have to acknowledge that. You have to go through that process. And the more open you are in trusting and understanding of each other's positions, the better off you'll be, I think.
Oh, you've given so much insight and so much great advice. The overarching theme, though, is communication. And it's interesting as I go through this podcast and I speak with different guests that that's truly always the overarching theme is communication, 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 because, you know, we're not mind readers. As well as you know somebody, as we go through life, we're all constantly changing and evolving and becoming different versions of ourselves as we age and go through different life stages and changes. I love hearing all of that. And I love seeing that people are becoming more aware, because there's, you know, nothing. I think it's always so sad when you see really great couples crumble and ends up not working out because of a handful of things. But oftentimes people are, it's like, well, we couldn't talk through it.
Well, part of the issue there is, and I had this conversation with somebody recently, if you're missing something from an intimate, you know, part of your life, and you know, people always ask, like, why don't you just talk to your wife about it or your husband about it? Here's what's happening, I think. The fear, not of being rejected, but of being ridiculed. Because if you go to the person who is the most important person in your life, you've been with them 10, 15, 20 years, and you say, listen, Nikki, there's, you know, this is airy activity, this thing I want to try, I'm interested in, I want to discuss with you. And you might say, well, it doesn't really do anything for me. No. Okay. That's reasonable. But if you say, oh my God, Paul, you're a disgusting pervert and a weirdo for even thinking that, that is a crushing, crushing blow. So the fear of that is what drives people to go elsewhere. Because if a stranger turns you down and shames or ridicules you, you don't particularly care because there's no investment in that individual. But if the person who's supposed to love and trust me and be my best everything is going to ridicule me, or I fear that, it can drive a lot of attention externally from the relationship. And that, you know, that comes from a lack of ongoing conversation, a lack of a space where we can deal with stuff and in a trusted way, so that, and again, not just acquiesce to each other's, you know, whims and needs or wants, but at least first with them in a safe space so that there's trust there and acknowledge that, you know, things may come up that we both may not agree on, but we're not going to ridicule each other for it.
That's totally fair. And that makes so much sense, because I think about how I am in general in life with family and friends. And I have this threshold of when I am okay with somebody making fun of me for a certain thing, right? If we just meet and you're automatically making snide remarks, or if I just happen to say something and you launch a jab at me, I'm kind of like, who the fuck are you? But if somebody's known me for quite some time, then it's like, you've earned the right to like make fun of my quirks and idiosyncrasies. But I think I can see what you're saying also on the flip side too, that could also be incredibly painful if you go to somebody and you're kind of like, hey, I'm going to be super vulnerable right now. And then if that person like laughs in your face or is like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? That's gross.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to crush my soul, that's going to be devastating. And that crushes a psyche, particularly, and quite frankly, I think particularly on the male side, in a world where, you know, we're not allowed to have, or not supposed to have all these big emotions. And if you crush me, I have nowhere to turn to now. Mm-hmm. Because I'll be honest with you, guys don't talk about this stuff. It's fascinating. Yeah. There's this great clip about this guy who went golfing with his buddy who was just divorced, and the wife's asking like, what, you know, is so-and-so dating? I don't know. What's he doing? Totally. I don't know. What the hell did you talk about 4.5 hours? Golf.
Right?
Like, but that's men. We don't get into our feelings with other men, whereas women talk about everything. And so we don't have this outlet. So men will, if they fear that their partner is not going to be open to or receptive to what they're saying, not just necessarily acquiesce to it, but not receive it in a way that at least consideration is there, they will either push that thought down, suppress it, which leads to bad outcomes, or take it externally.
Okay, I have one more question, because I do know that group of women that I know are our listeners that were married and their husbands were serial cheaters. I know that when I started this show that some of them were kind of like, okay, like this really sucks because you're sitting here talking about that you were the other person in an affair and you are talking about it so loudly. And like, this is, brings up a lot of painful emotions for me. So I would imagine that those women in particular can hear this conversation with you and me and think, fuck this website. They're helping facilitate the thing that hurt me the most. What do you say to those people?
Well, obviously we get lots of criticism, right? I mean, think about it from this perspective. The Ten Commandments mention adultery twice, no other sin. So murder only gets one, but adultery gets two. So there's a lot of animosity towards us for you know, from a societal perspective. But you can shut my business down tomorrow. It doesn't change anything. Like, all these things are going to happen. They're going to happen elsewhere. Like, our biggest competition is not another dating app. It's, in fact, really The Office, because traditionally that's more often than not where affairs take place, because you spend so much time there. And then you add in business travel or work events, holiday parties, all those great things. And that's where our biggest thing is. Like, we all remember Coldplay concert.
Oh, well, no, yes, that. But did you guys get a big uptick in COVID of memberships because people weren't going to work?
Huge. We were up, I think, initially like 30%. It was wild. It was like right away. Because think about it. Like, around the world, people were forced into their homes. Never mind not being in the office. You're forced in your homes. And all the outlets we had at that point in our life to distract us from the cracks in our relationship, you know, boys' night, girls' night, sports, events, all the things we
Everything was gone.
Immediately. Now I'm 24 hours a day locked in a house with this person. And if you had a crack in that foundation, it was going to get exposed and it was going to probably widen. And we became an outlet for millions of people around the world for that very reason.
Wow, I bet. I mean, I thought about it from The Office perspective, but then as you started talking more about like, like we weren't having happy hours with our girlfriends, like guys weren't going to a baseball game on Wednesday night after work. Like, there wasn't golf on the weekends. There wasn't birthday parties
was
for
nothing.
Kids.
Tough time. And I think, you know, for years, they will study the outcomes from that event in terms of how it impacted every function of our lives. But particularly, obviously, from our perspective, how relationships changed dramatically. Because, you know, now I look at, because I'm recently dating again. And, you know, what I look for in a partner is so much more different than what I would have said in my early 20s.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I felt the exact same way. It's like, it's almost like that's a whole different person. It's not just a different version of me. It's like an entirely different woman.
Yeah.
Isn't that, I mean, it's just, it's nuts what, you know, as you grow and change and go through all these different aspects of life and figure out who you are now, it's what you want and look for changes dramatically. Yeah.
And this is why, you know, going back to the beginning where I talked about Dr. Tammy Nelson's 5-year monogamy contract, you change dramatically over the course of relationship, your interests, your desires, your needs, your wants, all these things. And if you're not talking about those changes, if you're not reflecting on those changes you're doing yourself a disservice, and you're doing your partner a disservice, because you're expecting them suddenly to, you know, change with you, but they don't know. They're not a mind reader.
Right,
and so
right.
you've got to say it for it to be real.
So do you guys ever get hate mail?
Of course, people are like, how dare you? People get upset. And I understand that. And not, you know, I'm not going to turn around and say it's 100% the other spouse's fault. That's not, you know, what I'm saying. But what I'll tell people, if affairs show up in your relationship, you do need to look at the full picture and understand what happened here.
Yeah.
Did I marry somebody who that's who they are? Did I create a dynamic, or did we create a dynamic that didn't facilitate each other's needs? Sometimes people have what, again, Dr. Nelson calls a can opener affair. Some people have affairs with the intention of getting caught because they've told their partner that they need change and they want change. And the partner either doesn't listen, doesn't do it, or is maybe unable to. And the partner will have this affair with the intent of getting caught to say, no, no, I'm really serious about this. And if you can't fulfill my needs, I'm going to get it elsewhere. And they do it to show how serious they are. And it sounds counterintuitive, but it certainly does happen from time to time. And what's amazing, if you've lived long enough life, there's people in your life who've had affairs, and it doesn't necessarily end the marriage. It's not always the case. And this is what people get, you know, upset at me sometimes, because when I do these interviews, like the comment section, you know, I get a lot of attacks, which my kids, by the way, love reading. And nothing like a teenage boy who wants to see his dad get eviscerated online. I'll say, you know, having an affair can potentially save a marriage. In multiple ways. And people are like, that's horrible. Well, hold on. If somebody was having an affair and they get caught and the marriage survives, they probably had some really hard conversations about what was happening. And in order for it to continue and the affairs to stop, something must have changed. And wouldn't that be for the better?
I think I mean,
I would argue yes. I don't think the person who's having the affair is saying, you know what, let's make it worse and stop having affairs. Like, that doesn't make any damn sense. So I'm not saying it's the best route to take, but in a world where, you know, these conversations are hard and difficult and we don't have the education system that supports our learning in the early years, it's no surprise that the outcome is a website like Ashley Madison with nearly 90 million members.
Absolutely. All right. Last question before I'll let you go. Do you find your role at this company impacts your personal life in any way, or even your dating life in any way?
So I have never had a bad interaction in a social setting when people discover what I do. Quite the opposite. People are fascinated. They want to know, they have questions about, and it's really about the business. It's about the, you know, the nature of infidelity, just as our conversation has sort of unfolded today. On a dating level, I do tell any woman before I even get to the, let's go on a date. By the way, I work at Ashley Madison, because I, you know, like I said, I'm 50. So most of the women I'm dating often are divorced. And, you know, there's always the potential that there was an affair involved. And so I give them that choice. I wouldn't want to surprise somebody on a first date. And so some have definitely swiped left after that disclosure. And that's fine. But I'd rather know on the upfront. But it's not a huge deal.
That's good. Well, thank you so much. This has been really enlightening. It's been really enjoyable. I appreciate all of your openness and all of the information that you shared. So thank you for joining me on The Scarlet Edit.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Scarlet Edit. I hope that no matter if affairs have touched your life or not, that you were able to walk away with something about relationships that made you think, made you want to implement, or maybe even made you judge someone a little less. As always, please let me know what you think. Send me a DM on Instagram at thescarlet.edit, and in your podcast app, please rate and review the show. It means so much to me. Until next week, bye.